Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. It's June 29, 2022. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Jay Beeman. Welcome, Jay. I'm delighted to have you join me.
Thank you.
We start at the beginning, and I've known you for at least a couple of years, but I don't know. Where were you born?
I was born in Southern Oregon, actually Drane, Oregon, but grew up in Grants Pass and Medford.
And were those home areas for your parents, or how did they happen to be there?
My parents were from a small town in Colorado, and my dad was in the military service after World War II, and he ended up in Dalhart, Texas, with my mom and three children by then. And they moved to Oregon because my dad had taken clerk telegrapher school in Texas on the GI Bill and got a job working for the Southern Pacific Railroad in Oregon. Was posted out of Wheeler, Oregon, and his first job was running a drawbridge, which you can see in North Bend, Oregon, right down on the water.
That sounds like an amazing job. Did you ever get to go with him?
I did. Once he was agent in Riddle, Oregon, and he would stay there for the week and come home on the weekends. So one short period, I got to go with him. He lived in the depot while we were shopping for a house. And as a just about middle school student, I stayed in the depot with him for a few days and walked the rail yards with him there in Riddle, Oregon.
So does this mean that your family spent some time on trains as you were growing up?
We did. When we took family vacations, we got a discount and took the train to Colorado and, you know, had these observation cars you could sit up in and, of course, sleep in your seats or on the floor as you traveled all the way to Colorado. Yeah, very fond memories. By the way, one time, the Centennial of Oregon in 1959, my folks dressed up for that season as pioneers. My dad grew a full beard, and my mother made their clothes and wore a bonnet. And they did this on the trip to Colorado on the train. And everybody kept asking them, "Are you Mennonites?"
Which they weren't.
They weren't. No.
Well, you've already mentioned that there are three of you in terms of siblings. Where do you fit in that grouping?
Well, I wasn't born when they came to Oregon, so I'm the fourth and the only boy.
And you were the last one? So there are
five.
So there was another one after you?
Yes.
And the rest are all girls?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Tell me about growing up with so many sisters.
Well, I'm told I received special attention from my dad. You know, probably teacher's pet. But I think I also learned a little bit about the other gender in terms of, you know, living with four sisters. And it probably helped me a little bit as an adult.
Did you ever wish you had a brother?
You know, I didn't think about it much. There were plenty of children in that family. So, you know, you're all scrapping for your own piece of territory. Yeah.
So because the rest were all female, did you get your own bedroom at some point?
I did at some point, yeah. So my father built most of our houses. And working for the railroad, he had to move very often. They had a system of seniority, and you could actually take someone else's job if you had more seniority than them. And it was called bumping. And so periodically, he would have somebody else take his job. And there would be this whole series of moves where everybody took each other's jobs. And very often, he had to move to another location to keep a good job. So he would build our houses, and often they were quite unfinished. So a number of times I had little cubby bedrooms here and there. There were times when the whole family, all five children, shared one room, because we moved so often, the housing would often be kind of inadequate.
So as you were moving around, we're going to get you, say, into school. I'm going to guess that you went to public school most of this time. Is that true?
Yes. I went to school in Grants Pass and Medford mostly. And I think we moved 19 times before I was in college.
So sometimes you didn't even finish like a whole school year in one place?
Right. Yeah. And more than once, didn't finish a school year in one place. It was very difficult for my sisters, but I kind of embraced it. And probably it influenced my adult life institutionally as well. I found myself moving institutionally as an adult as well. And even my church affiliations, sometimes I found it easier to move than some other people. Working in academics in my generation, many academics couldn't find a good full-time career in one place and had to move very often and were referred to as academic gypsies. I assume that's kind of a racist term, but the idea was that you had to move. You had to move to keep your career. And sometimes that was true almost religiously as well. So I found myself a boundary person for my whole life, moving across one boundary to another. And it kind of defined my approach to life. And actually, in my academic career as a sociologist, I was a bit of an anthropologist, kind of trying to understand each new place, each new group that I was a part of.
So in those younger years, say during elementary, junior high, and with all this moving around, did you find it easy to make friends, or was that challenging?
I found it pretty easy. Pretty easy. It was more challenging for my sisters and mother. They found themselves experiencing outsider status a little bit more than me. Yeah. And some moves were, I remember one time moving to a community in Southern Oregon. I won't name it. But we moved there and we only stayed 6 weeks. And we started the school year and it just became clear that ethnically, socially, we felt like outsiders. And it didn't bother me too much, although I was starting to exhibit some behaviors as an outsider. For my mom and sisters, it just was too frustrating. And we moved back to Grants Pass.
Did your mother work outside the home at any time while you were growing up?
She did. It was sort of over the protests of my dad, both culturally and a certain time in the 50s, it was frowned upon. It was considered a mark against the husband that he couldn't provide fully for his wife, and he also couldn't control her. So I often say that my mom basically decided two things on her own. One day when I was 5 years old, my dad left for work and my mom was not a driver. He came home and she was driving our car, and she had a driver's license at the end of the day. Shortly afterwards, she took me to school. I was only 5 years old, and the school said, well, he's too young. He can't start school. And she said, look, I've had him 5 years. Now it's your turn. And she basically left me with an unwilling school. I was 5 years old and I started the first grade. And I was so small, people would pick me up and carry me around. But my mom, the other thing she did on her own was she decided at times to work. For a while, she worked at Bear Creek Orchards or Bear Creek Packing House in Southern Oregon. It's quite a famous place to purchase items, especially seasonal items. And she'd work there during the Christmas season. One time in high school, I was taking a tour of factories. They were teaching us about social class and what they called the working class and how some people had to work in factories. And so they took us on a factory line and allowed us to interview factory workers. And they took us to Bear Creek. And, you know, I realized every woman on that line was my mother working the Christmas season. And according to my school, we were working class people who had to kind of scrap for a living and weren't treated really well in the workplace. And it gave me a whole new appreciation for social class, for the difficulty of making a living under capitalism in our society, and also the plight of women. And it made me much more sympathetic with my mom as a worker, as a member of the community at large. And then later she worked for Amway, selling Amway products. I will say our whole church was compromised by this institutional affiliation with Amway. So Sunday morning, you'd go to church and the parking lot would be kind of a sales area. And then you'd go in and worship together and come back out and some people would be taking delivery of soap products. Oh, dear.
That is the perfect segue, since I was going to ask you, what role did church play in those growing up years?
Church was, it was our other social location. A lot of working class people went to Pentecostal churches. And my folks were converted in Oregon, in the town I was born in Drane, Oregon. And my dad was working for the railroad, and a little tiny upstart Pentecostal church in Drane, Oregon. His colleague at work encouraged him to come to a revival meeting. And my dad and mom went from being what they called nominal Christians, kind of Christians in name only, in their interpretation, to kind of on fire Christians, fired up Christians, and they became Pentecostals. And, you know, for people with minimal education, the pastor's wife in that church helped my mom, who got married very young and had a lot of children and felt isolated, helped her with some of the problems of life, how you raise your children, how you think about your relationship to the community. So church became our social location as well. And it defined us as working people. It defined us as simple people. It defined us, that we thought, as the salt of the earth, you know? It also made us different, or it channeled our difference. And so our difference could be seen as a positive thing. And we could cohere together in a community around our positive differences. At times, we felt embattled, you know, us against the world. And the world was persecuting us if they had differences with us or if they made fun of us. And one time, our neighbors, my dad was building our house, and the outside was just tar paper. And the neighbors came over and spray painted or somehow painted a sign on our house that said tar paper shack in the middle of the night. And I always felt that kind of defined our sense of feeling about where we were in the community. And we kind of related that to our religion. But really, our religion probably just gave us a way of putting a positive spin on being kind of hillbillies, you know, and being considered kind of hillbillies.
Wow. How old were you when your parents started attending this church?
Right when I was born. Yeah. And it really kind of exemplified a movement in America after World War II, really after both wars, even after the Civil War. There were these movements to try to regroup, try to make society better. It was quite clear that the Civil War, World War I, and World War II had damaged much that was considered social, much that was considered communal, and that it would have to be repaired. And religion became a vital part of reuniting and kind of making people feel fully American again, and healing some of the wounds. And so after World War II, there was this large movement. And what really happened was a lot of people in the mainline churches or on the edge of the mainline churches moved into these evangelical sectarian churches. And they kind of became the mainstream by the 1960s and the 1970s. And we were a part of that. And it was also a social class movement from the working class into the middle class. So we were moving uptown a step at a time. Yeah.
So just a little bit more about your teenage years. Since you moved around so much, I'm not sure if this is a relevant question, but did you ever get involved in any extracurricular activities, any sports or drama or music or any of those kinds of things?
The closest would be by the time I graduated from high school. I wasn't good at sports. I was generally small and not particularly athletic. And it was a great disappointment to my mother. My dad had graduated from a tiny high school in Colorado. And so all of his five friends were on the basketball team. Everybody that graduated from high school was on the basketball team. And well, we went to these rather large schools in Medford. And I couldn't last in sports beyond the sixth grade, and even that was harrowing. So I found myself a little bit, only slightly bookish, and the main book was the Bible, of course. But by the end of high school, I also had, in one of my churches, I'd joined a photo club, and I'd become kind of a photographer, and I even worked in a photo store. So I was the photographer for the high school newspaper and the high school yearbook. Probably the closest I came to a kind of secular occupation in my high school years. Yeah. And what you would call extracurricular. But all my activities were church. Church camp in the summer was extremely important. It was a major event. And, at our church, we had what were called revival meetings, probably four times a year, extended meetings that would last 1 to 2 to 3 weeks. And you would go every night and twice on Sunday. So your social group then focused on that. And in time, my social group became a youth group at that church. And in that time, the Jesus movement was happening on the West Coast. And it was a thing. And we participated pretty heavily, not only in school, but in the larger community. And there were these people that were literally hippies coming out of Berkeley that would go preaching up and down the West Coast. And they seemed like something exotic from another world. And I kind of related to them a little bit, too.
So rushing along here, there's so many more questions one could ask, but we need to get you a little further down the road. So after you graduated from high school, what came next? If it was higher education, was that something that had happened with your sisters? Talk a bit about what happens after high school for Jay.
So my father graduated high school, but kind of barely after World War II. Even his high school was hardly intact. Most of the faculty had been drafted into the war effort, you know. My mother did not graduate from high school. She was married by the time she was 17. You know, she had a child by the time she was 18. And the Pentecostal church, by this time, by the 1960s, had lots of colleges. And the only thing you could aspire to, and I don't mean this in a negative way, was to be a preacher or a singer. And these colleges kind of capitalized on this. In time, they even offered education programs, as in you could become a teacher. But that was a little before my time. And basically, every young man, women a little less, but not completely less, was encouraged, if you can put a sentence together and make an argument, you probably should be preaching. You might make a living some other way, but you probably should be preaching. And so I went to a Pentecostal college, and it was my dad's dream that all of his children would do at least a year in college. And the way my dad put it was, it's okay if you don't go any further, but do at least a year. And so he really pushed us towards a college in Kirkland, Washington, Northwest College of the Assemblies of God. So I went there. My older sister, Sue, my second to the oldest, actually graduated a year before I did. And that was considered phenomenal. And she actually helped me type my first term paper. You had these marathons where everybody typed their term papers the same night. And it was amazing. Anyway, I guess three of my sisters went to college too at that college. And my second oldest and myself graduated from that college. And I intended to become a Pentecostal minister. But by the time I graduated, I couldn't quite agree to some of the narrow beliefs that defined Pentecostalism. And I found myself kind of on the outside as a preacher. I felt I was quite trained to be a preacher and was pretty sure of myself, but I couldn't be ordained.
So what was your actual degree in your college degree?
It was in biblical studies with a minor in speech and preaching.
Well, there's 20 or 30 years in here that we're not even going to have time for. You obviously became an academic, but at some point you found, I don't know if you've just found Mennonites, but I know you found Portland Mennonite Church. Can you tell us that story, please?
After I graduated from college, I had just gotten married and started thinking about what I was going to do. And somebody gave me a magazine called Sojourners Magazine. And I found myself just amazed that I'd never been exposed to the larger world and what was happening in the Christian faith in the larger world while I was going to college in the Vietnam War. And Sojourners Magazine was actually criticizing the cultural Christianity that I had been a part of. And I found myself just completely moved by this presentation of a kind of Jesus movement that really wasn't behind the Vietnam War, that wasn't behind this kind of cultural imperialism. And I had to rethink just about everything about my faith immediately. So it put me on a quest, on a journey. And In reading Sojourner's Magazine, I came across Mennonites and started studying them and thinking about what happened in the Protestant Reformation. And that kind of became a quest for me. I started referring to myself as an Anabaptist, a person of this tradition, even a latecomer to it. But then I went to a Baptist seminary. But in going to a Baptist seminary, it was kind of convenience because it was in the town my wife had been raised in Sioux Falls. And I made it clear to them that I wanted to pursue kind of an Anabaptist agenda. And they were at home with that. Anyway, I got out of seminary and became a Baptist pastor and pursued a PhD at Iowa State while being a pastor, a rural pastor, all the while making contact with Mennonites along the way. The first time I joined a Mennonite church was in California when I was working in a factory. And I could tell I was a little bit too much for them. They were wonderful people, extremely German heritage. Some of them still spoke German. And deeply, when I joined that church, it was for real. I was deeply moved by their experience, but I couldn't quite bridge all the gaps, and certainly not for my family. So anyway, I became a Mennonite at heart very early in my adulthood, and I found myself trying to encourage other people in Pentecostal and Baptist churches to be influenced by the Mennonites, even if they couldn't cross the bridge. And so finally, after kind of ending my career trying to do this, and I worked at George Fox College, a Quaker school, for a while as well, but I found myself trying to push evangelicals to be more Anabaptist or to push peace and justice. And I found myself just beating my head against the wall. And so ultimately, after my career was just about done and I realized I wasn't going to have a career in a religious way, helping evangelicals become more Anabaptists or helping evangelicals become more peace and justice people, I finally just said, you know what? I'm going to go to a Mennonite church myself now. I've paid my dues. So that's kind of how I ended up in the Mennonite church. And the transition to Mennonite church allowed me to stop being a kind of a professional minister, professional academic, pursuing religious studies, and allowed me to just do my academic career as a researcher, and then on my free time, pursue studies of how the church had kind of drifted from peacemaking.
Oh, there are so many more things. I mean, we just got the tiniest little glimpse of your life and we're already out of time. But Jay, thank you so very much for taking the time to give us a glimpse into your fascinating life. I've just really enjoyed spending time with you.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions, or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.